Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 21st of July. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Charles Archer.
Okay, so this week's been a mess, really, hasn't it? What has happened? We've basically, somebody's tried to take Trump's head off and took his ear off instead. What was that all about?
Yeah, absolutely. That was an absolute shocker. But, I mean, let's start off. Who's been in Milwaukee this week? Has anyone seen any famous people out there on the news?
Russell Brand was there. He was doing his podcast from Milwaukee.
Okay, so anyone else?
I don't know. I have no idea. What are you talking about?
Boris Johnson went out.
Oh, well, this is why no one's heard of it. Go on.
Yeah. So he posted a photo, didn't he? Stood next to Trump on saying, on top form after the attempt on his life, we discussed Ukraine, and I have no doubt that he will be strong and decisive in supporting that country and defending democracy. So just when you thought he was burnt out, Bojo's back on the scene. We also had Nigel Farage as well there doing his little bit. And also, I don't know if you saw Hulk Hogan as well as part of the sort of a bit of an ambassador for Trump now.
Thing is, I'm not sure whether they're ambassadors for Trump or they just desperately don't want Biden in power, given that he's, you know, mentally not there anymore. And I think you're seeing more and more, because most people are kind of in the center politically, right, with like a few left and right things. It's just same is true of most people in America. And they're just looking at the choices they have. Neither of the choices seem good. But if your choices are to endorse Biden, who's just mentally just not competent anymore, or Trump, who's a bit of a lunatic, but his mind is still sound, there's no real choices there. I think that seems to be what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, what did you make of that? Obviously, we're alluding to the fact that there was an assassination attempt on Trump's life when he was in Pennsylvania. What do you make of the way that it all panned out in terms of, you know, there was apparent shooter, sniper on the roof. There was obviously snipers in position. They failed to, let's say, react, or, you know, there was law enforcement officers who were informed that there was somebody on the roof. It seems like it was, they maybe didn't act in time. The rally went ahead. You hear the whizzing of bullets, and obviously Trump's then, you know, pulled to the ground. And then the next second is his ears bleeding and he's got the ultimate campaign poster. So what were the failings there? Was anyone, you know, responsible there?
Well, I think you can say the Secret Service failed. But you can also, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's the same with kind of running a company. How many potential assassination attempts have there been that have been stopped? And this one got through, you know, the line. Somebody like Trump, I imagine there's been dozens, if not hundreds, that people have never, you know, heard of and never got to that point. In terms of, you know, what it's done to the campaign, I mean, as you said, you know, you alluded to that poster, that picture of him with the fist pump and the American flag above his head, ear bleeding. I mean, that was the point. He's won. He's won the election. Do you know, like, nobody can compete with that kind of media power. And, I'm hoping potentially it helps America take a step back from this kind of really strong political violence. Like what we have in the UK, for example, a lot of people disagree politically, but we can still have a pint with each other and it's absolutely fine.
Yeah. In America, it's not as divisive, is it?
It's just so divisive in the States. And obviously you're going to have that because it's just a much wider landmass and, you know, lots of different cultures, but hopefully people would look at that and go, right, we need to step down the divisive language. We need to, you know, be a bit more supportive of each other's views. Whether that happens or not, I don't know.
Probably a question for Kev, being a man of the cloth. Do you think that this whole thing with Trump is going to change his attitude in terms of showing humility, showing some sort of, I don't know, respect for people, not be as you know, shouting at people because of the fact he realises, you know, he said I shouldn't be here. He, you know, basically said it was a sort of divine intervention. God was watching over me. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to be, as you put it, a man of the cloth. If you come within an inch of your life, and basically it looks like he tilted his head, at a specific time. And that meant it didn't go through his brain, basically, and he was dead. I think that's going to make you think, no? It doesn't have to make you think necessarily of God and of, you know, what's after this. But it's going to make you think. It's going to make you be a bit more probably introspective and think about what is going on. I have seen that the rhetoric has gone down in the last week anyway. And I think that's partly from the Democrats because they've actually You know, they pulled all the adverts straight away, slag and Trump off. And I think one of the court cases was dismissed straight away. You know, and I don't know that that wasn't going to happen anyway, but probably wasn't. You know, a conspiracy theorist in terms of that, but it makes us all think. I mean, in my view, anyway, yeah, and it is my faith. You know, we're not just here and then gone. You know, so yeah, what we do here is important, but. You know, there's an eternal perspective to life, as I believe it. So,
yeah, no,
will it make him change? No, it's not going to change his personality. Trump is Trump, isn't it? You know, and it may make him calm down a bit and think a bit more about, you know, what's going to happen. But I've seen lots of reports, and what we've got here is we've got a empire in the USA which is in decline. Right? Just like the British Empire was in decline 100 years plus ago, we've got the US in decline, and that means there's going to be a changing of the guard over time, without doubt, in my view. And, you know, it doesn't change that. Will Trump become president? Not because of this, but, you know, in spite of this, I personally think he will.
And I think he's better than, but I think the reality is he's better for the US than Biden right now. I know whether you like it or not, for the economy, yes, obviously the interest rates and probably the economy in America won't thank him initially, because the amount of borrowing that Trump does is going to be unbelievable, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So the Fed are probably not looking at that. But ultimately, I think for the people, it's probably the best vote now.
I guess it's.
But what has actually happened in the last 2 to 3 years? Who has been running United States of America?
Yeah,
because it isn't by, you know, it isn't even the Democratic Party as such. Now, what I think the deep state are most upset about and most scared about is that Trump is going to come in, and the second time around, I think he's going to basically get rid of that deep state situation, that situation in Washington where everybody who has cash can influence decisions. Whether he succeeds or not, I very much doubt he will, but the scenario is he's going to attempt to try and do it, because unlike most other countries, I think the US is effectively run by the powerful who have the money to negotiate with the decision makers.
Yeah. Do we think that Biden will involve the 25th? I mean, we've seen obviously Obama has now moved against Biden, is facing increased pressure to withdraw his re-election bid. Obviously, we saw the fact that he'd recently tested positive for COVID-19 with obviously mild symptoms, and I think he's gone into isolation. Do we think now he's also kind of suggesting a medical condition maybe could force him to reconsider this running again? What are your thoughts on that?
I think he'll... I think he's going to drop out. And one really interesting thing is that when funding is generated for political parties in the United States, it can only be spent on either the candidates that they had in mind at the moment. So it's a bit complex, but the basic thing is that they'll replace him with Kamala Harris, because otherwise they have to give the funding back and then ask for it back from the donators. Yeah. And then the question is, will Kamala Harris versus Trump? I mean, she'll get steamrolled by him.
So it'll be involved the 25th, bring Harris in, because that'll be the way it runs.
Yeah.
You don't think that they're going to be other maybe potential candidates, like you've got the California governor, I think it's Gavin Newsom, and then you've got the Michigan Gretchen Whitmer. Do you not think that they're more likely to come in?
Oh, they can.
She's got to bring in a vice president as well. So
I think the big thing is the funding, because you've got the election in a few months. They don't have time to navigate getting all the finances up and running. I think they'll just go with the easiest possible candidate. But you're right, it could be very, very difficult for them. Had they dealt with this 6 months ago, it would be fine. But they chose not to, and here we are.
Yeah, and Kamala Harris is another, I'm sorry for saying it, but she's another numpty. She's not. Some of the comments that she's saying are just bizarre. They don't even make sense.
Do you know, we had our election in the UK, Keir Starmer versus Rishi Sunak, and Starmer has won, and you know, for good or for ill. But regardless, both of them are reasonably young and have their mental faculties, right? You feel spoilt in the UK. You don't realise that even though our choices are possibly not that great, they're a lot better than what the Americans are currently having to choose between. Because, yes, okay, gun to my head, right now I would vote Trump over Biden. I would. But I would not be happy making that vote.
No, absolutely. Well, Now you mentioned Starmer. Obviously, it's a good time to talk about. We saw the King's Speech this week, something a bit closer to home. There were 40 new bills announced, making it, I think it was the seventh longest since the Second World War. Some of the key legislation includes, I don't know what you all like to get your thoughts on this, Charles, like the National Wealth Fund Bill, which apparently aims to establish a fund to invest in green industries with the aim of creating 650,000 jobs, which is going to be supported by an initial £7.3 billion capital injection via the UK Infrastructure Bank. You also got the Budget Responsibility Bill. It aims to prevent the recurrence of mistakes like obviously we saw with Liz Truss's famous mini-budget, where she crashed the economy. Obviously, by mandating independent assessments from the Office for Budget Responsibility for any significant fiscal changes. And then this one, which is interesting in our sort of commodity sector, the Great British Energy Bill, which is going to set up the Great British Energy, which is going to be a publicly owned company tasked with managing and operating clean power projects, backed by an £8.3 billion in funding over the next parliament. What do you make of those, some of those, Charles, in there? I mean, let's go through them one by one. What about this National Wealth Fund Bill?
Borrow over £7.2 or £3 billion. Look, it's simple, okay? If these were good ideas, private enterprise would fund them. Because private enterprise is happy to take on risk if the reward for the risk is good enough to make it worthwhile. It's not. So what you're saying, I really dislike the language they're using, because a sovereign wealth fund like they have in Norway, for example, is actual capital that they've built over time. They're just going to borrow more money at a high interest rate to throw it at projects which private finance wouldn't dream of financing. Not sure how that's going to end, but I'm suspecting some people will make a lot of money and the country will be worse off. It's the same.
No, it's an interesting comparison, because I thought of the Sovereign Wealth Fund in Norway, you say, like, which is now, I think it's changed name now, but it's effectively like it's like an energy fund, because it's funded from the oil and gas from the North Sea exploration from Norway. But ultimately, why didn't we invest 40, 50 years ago when the North Sea was starting to go into production? Why didn't the UK government actually start under Thatcher putting money into as a wealth fund of our own?
I mean, the argument was that in Norway, where there's a few million people, in this country where there's tens of millions of people, the benefits to spending at the time would have been better had it been spent rather than invested. And there was a good argument for that, but obviously you have British politicians implementing the spending, so we kind of threw it down the drain. What I find particularly interesting about it is, anyone invested in juniors in North Sea exploration, we're stopping exploration in the North Sea, which, all of that tax money, you could then, if Starmer said, what we're going to do is, there's 40 years of oil and gas left in the North Sea in our life in the UK, we're going to exploit all of it, and all of that money is going to go into renewable energy. All of the tax money from that, we're going to put it into renewables. That would be something I could get behind, because instead they're going, right, what we're going to do is...
We're going to revoke all the licenses, and we're not going to do another round, and we're going to...
Mad. We're going to cut our tax and also increase our borrowing while interest rates are above 5%. It's just madness. I don't want to use the word idiots, but anyone with a calculator can figure out that if you're getting less tax money in and you're spending more, then we're going to have a higher deficit.
I mean, the Budget Responsibility Bill, that's got to be a good thing, right? To run it through the OBR.
Yes and no. To start with, the OBR never, ever, ever gets it right. Well, this is the first thing. And the second thing is that, so you've put a bill through Parliament and you said, you can't break this law. The next government comes in and says, right, we'll just get rid of that law on day one and do whatever we want, because that's, parliamentary supremacy. I think that specifically with Liz Truss, for example, you talk about how, she sent mortgage rates like sky high and the bond market sky high. A few months after she left, the mortgage rates and the bond markets were exactly back where, they had been when she, departed. Her problem was, she's politically incompetent, not that her policies were, potentially awful. She just had no idea how to implement them over time. I mean, it's any law that you put through the UK Parliament is kind of irrelevant, because the next government can just repeal it whenever they want.
Yeah, I mean, do you think the big government is back? Do you think anything has changed under... He seems to have done a lot on trying to bring these 40 new bills, but do you think anything in reality is actually going to change?
No, I mean, the reality is we still have the highest tax burden since World War II. The spending commitments on an aging population are going to get higher and higher. You're going to have very difficult conversations around immigration, I think, and housing costs, because those are the two big things. Because house prices are too expensive, immigration is too high. But if people aren't having children because house prices aren't realistic, you need immigration to keep the economy going. And yet we have decided as a country we want less of it. So all of the kind of the big picture things in terms of the economy, whereas immigration or housing or the market, it's not, Labour aren't going to be able to change anything. It's kind of fiddling around the edges. Because essentially all I can see over the next 5 years is that we see more and more tax rises. That's what's going to happen, with less and less public spending. And then higher earners are just en masse. Like, already, you know, I know three people in the past 6 months who have left the country because they've had enough, you know, all of them higher earners. And, you know, I might be one to join them relatively soon. I've had enough of it too.
I think I see a lot of posts on there. People want to move abroad, and, you know, you've got Portugal with its 10-year tax-free effectively allowance on there. And, you know,
yeah. Italy,
the problem is Brexit has put a bit of a kibosh on people being able to, you know, with the non-Schengen zones and all the ability to stay, you know, unless you get residency, you can't stay there for, is it more than 90 days, something like that?
I mean, money talks, isn't it? You know, like, there's so many digital nomad visas and just visas in general. But, like, I was literally yesterday night, I was doing an Excel spreadsheet just looking at all the tax that my limited company personally pay. And when you add it all up, whether it's, you know, VAT or corporation tax, dividend taxes, yeah, even going down to things like council tax and parking charges, you know, like, it's ridiculous. It feels like I spend more than half of my time working for the government, you know, than what you actually get in yourself. Phil, I imagine you have kind of similar kind of painful tax experiences. And normally, you know, suddenly it would be all right if we were in Scandinavia, where all the public services are fantastic, I think.
Yeah.
But when I, you know, I'm now looking, like, I speak three languages. I'm looking at Portugal, I'm looking at Italy. We could move a few hundred miles away and, you know, hour and a half by a plane to get home and pay less than half the tax we do. Why would we not move?
I see you, Charles, is buying one of those €1 houses in one of those, like, little...
Yeah,
in Puglia or something, and, like, you know, buy the house at auction, €1, and just go over there, project manage it, do it up for 6 months or a year, and go on, and you'd love it.
The Ask Charles Telegram group. Right, guys, there's 1,000 of you. We're going to buy 1,000 homes in southern Italy. Buongiorno.
Oh, my word, an Ask Charles Telegram community. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? But I do, you know, like, I feel like I'm whining. Like, I try not to whine too much about tax because it's out of your hands, essentially. But it has come to a point now where, like, I do not want to leave the UK at all. And I really love living in this country. And my wife doesn't want to go. And we've got children in school here. But it's coming to a point where, like, I'm seeing people earning less than me, a lot less than me, who are simply because they're living in other countries are generating more wealth. Because
I hope you're not talking about me, Charles, but it's probably true.
It's probably true, Kev. No, I just, we're not competitive in this country anymore. And the thing that the VAT on the private schools, right, is just symptomatic of, if you already have a significant amount of wealth, we won't tax you that much in the UK. But if you're trying to build any wealth from your income, we will attack you. I just feel that they don't want you to do well anymore.
They've even proven that with the fact of the corporation tax. They don't want these small, medium businesses. Yet if you're a massive company, a multinational corporation, you can evade tax like the Amazons of this world.
So easily.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's sort of like you kind of forget that, like, corporation tax was a flat 19% a year or two ago, right? Yeah. And now it's 25. Dividend tax allowance has gone down from, like, 10 grand to, what, a grand now, is it? Yeah. Capital gains allowance gone from 12,000 down to 3,000. You know, in all the tax bands, you know, the thresholds have been frozen. VAT, okay, yes, that's gone up to 90 grand, but actually, you know, if you're VAT registered, you're VAT registered anyway. The big one for me as well, that, like, a lot of, you know, maybe people won't sympathize, but a business asset disposal relief, which is effectively where when you sell your business, once you've built it up to a certain size, you used to be able to sell it at a 10% tax rate at the point of sale, up to £10 million.
Yes.
So if you were wildly successful with your first business...
I think
business,
it was something like entrepreneur
relief. Yeah. And now they've dropped that to 1 million and they're talking about scrapping it. And to me, I mean, that's kind of... Because people don't get that, like, when you're starting a business, you know, like I did, like you guys have, the amount of risk you take, not only to, like, invest your own money, but also to not work in another company, you're sacrificing all that potential salary. And you'll just...
And some of the benefits, like the pension or whatever goes with
sick pay or paternity pay or... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the UK doesn't want anyone to take any risks anymore. And it doesn't pay off if you do.
Absolutely.
But while you guys are all sort of crying in your beer, if you like...
it's hot down here in Devon, so I'm not that sad. I'm just annoyed.
Are you that surprised that Labour has introduced these things. I mean, I don't think it would have made that much difference if, other than the language between Labour and Conservative. My view, and everybody sees it as a panacea that should never be touched, but the older population in the UK needs to pay more tax.
Yeah.
Right? And everyone's like, no, how dare you? We've earned this through our national insurance. Guys, your national insurance contribution hasn't been paying the pensions for about 30 or 40 years because it's paid out of today's money. There's no pot serious NHS, national insurance, that's paying pensions.
Yeah.
And it's very unpopular, very, very, very unpopular. And the Conservatives could never have done it because their main vote is the old age pensioners, if you like. Okay, so anyway, we've talked a lot about politics.
Okay, so let's move on to our guests this week. We're joined by Charles Bray and Simon Rollison of Aterium. Welcome back, gents.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely, yeah. So finally, Charles, the company recently announced that the Rwandan subsidiary East Inco Limited secured a metal concentrate offtake agreement with a major international trading house, allowing the sale of tantalum, niobium and tin concentrates from Rwandan artisanal and small-scale mining companies. Alongside this, Aterium has arranged a $1 million trade finance debt facility to support trading operations with a 14.4% annual interest rate and a conversion option into Aterium equity at £1 per share. East Inco will aggregate and upgrade coltan concentrate in Kigali, reducing transport and logistic costs. Charles, chair of Aterium, you highlighted that these developments ensure a reliable sales channel and bolster revenue to support exploration efforts in Rwanda, Morocco, and Botswana. So, finally, Charles, you must be happy with the deal.
Absolutely thrilled. And
Charles, can I cheer at this point? Oh, no.
I think you can't.
Yay!
It's been a long time coming, but it's done. And I think what we're most proud of is the fact that we get to sell the product in Kigali. In terms of when we did the analysis on the risk and trading and looking at it, and, you know, it was obviously our first intention was to drive some revenues, to create some profitability, to support our exploration efforts, reduce dilution as much as possible. That's always front and center in our thinking. But when we did the risk analysis, what we saw was, on occasion, if you send a very valuable cargo out of Dar es Salaam, things can go missing. And so at this particular stage in our growth, development, whatever you want to call it, we just couldn't afford to have something like that happen. And so we negotiated long, as everyone's quite aware, and hard. And we were able to sell the product in Kigali. So we're very, very pleased about that.
I think the nice thing as well, Charles, just jumping in, is that, you know, the fact that we can sell basically on our doorstep and take away the logistics and the transport sort of risk factors, it also just makes it a much easier pathway for us to really work through this for a sort of 3 to 6 months to really build up the knowledge of the industry and the model and refine it as we go forwards.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very good. So this has started then? We're in progress?
We have not sold any product yet, is what I'm going to say. But I do expect that by the end of this month, that will be done. We're in the aggregation phase. So, and a lot of that has been over the past 12, 18 months at a stretch. We've been developing contacts with the artisanal mining community.
Which were some of the places we visited when we were there.
Exactly. Exactly. And so he's going out, refreshing all of those contacts, making sure they're aware. I mean, we've never dropped the contacts, but it's more a question of now saying, look, we actually can take delivery, pay you in a timely fashion, and let's get the ball rolling here. So that's really what July is going to be all about.
Very good. And from a financial perspective, what sort of, if you had a looking glass over the next 12 months, how do you see 12 months from now this impacting Aterium as a business as a whole?
Yeah, that's a very good question as well, because we want to start, as Simon alluded to a bit earlier, we want to start off relatively slow. And that's not for lack of ambition. It's much more about, again, making sure we have the risk understood, all the various cash flows. There was a recent change in the laws about royalties and or withholding of royalties. And so we want to make sure we're abiding by all of them. So I think over the first couple to 3 months, if we're dealing in 10 tons of concentrate per month, that would be satisfactory. I think after that, you know, we look to double that over the next quarter. And from there, you know, we shall see. In terms of profitability and gross margins, what we're hoping for is something like 5 to 10% initially.
That that quantity that you talked about, the place that you have in Kigali can handle this more? Or
I think we're quite confident it could handle, you know, 30, 40 tons per month. I think what needs to happen is, you know, we're dealing with a very expensive product. We need to make sure that our cash flow management systems are up to scratch. We need to make sure that we're, you know, managing that properly and making sure we don't take, again, we're very, very risk conscious. And so we'd rather take things a little bit more slowly, get it done right, make sure it's bedded in properly, and then grow it. So that's really what we're checking on.
Well, it seems it's a very good deal. I mean, the trade finance facility that was announced alongside it, the investors, you've got the option, $1 million, this is, to convert it into a tiering equity. It's a fixed price of £1 a share. That's a significant premium. So to me, that, you know, if nothing else, that screams confidence by that investor.
Yeah, we believe that's the case. The last funding we did was at 70p, which is a significant premium. And we have, since then, have had our shareholders come to us and say, look, if you guys need to raise some more money, we have some funds for you. And yes, 70p still works. So we're trading slightly below that. We recognize that. And it's just one of those things where there's a bit of a disconnect between what we see and feel from the market in terms of sentiment versus our own shareholding base. And I think this trade finance deal just reflects that again as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just beyond this today's deal, obviously, there's the joint venture with Rio Tinto. That's all coming to fruition, it feels, in this half of the year. Buying all of the drilling, it's got a lot of interesting stuff is going to come back, isn't it?
Q3 for us is very, very busy.
Yeah.
Simon can speak to that better than I can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I mean, in Rwanda with Rio Tinto, they've sort of delivered on everything that they said they were going to do. They've done license-wide ground-based geophysics, sampling, mapping. There's been a bit of a quiet period recently while they've been waiting for assay results to come back from the laboratory, but that's all coming in now. And then hopefully August, September, they'll start the site preparations to establish drill platforms.
Yes.
They've got a drill rig coming up. One to start with, and if, you know, things get encouraging and they look at the greater projects in Rwanda, then they'll bring up more rigs. So September time, hopefully, you know, they'll be drilling on the ground, and not sure how long it's going to take to get the data back, but, you know, it's quite a visual thing that they're targeting in drill core. So hopefully we'll have some exciting news coming up shortly.
It's going to be very fun because you're going to have both of these things going on at the same time, a potential revenue stream and a drill program that's funded by Rio. So, yeah, fantastic.
And that's not the least of it. We also have a drill program that we're launching in Morocco.
Oh, indeed.
So it's, you know, it's like London buses, I think. So.
It's all coming at the same time, isn't it? I think in the first half of the year, and forgive me for saying this, you weren't on the top of every investor's lips. But now it's all going to come at the same time within the next sort of 3 to 6 months. And then you're going to enter 2025, hopefully, with a really much stronger share price and much stronger business. I feel so anyway.
We believe so. We really do.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more, Simon, just about what's happening in Morocco and what we can expect over the next period of time as well.
We've been really active, actually, over the last sort of 6 months in Morocco, looking at our key projects. So that would be Agdez, Tata, Azra, and Gibelet. We've taken a lot of samples, done a lot of additional work. We're waiting for some of those results to come back through. We are going to start doing some ground-based geophysics. So we've purchased our own magnetometer so we can go and do some sort of field work on our own, not have to rely on other people. And as Charles said, you know, late this month or beginning of next month, we're going to start the preparation in Agdez, which is a copper-silver play in the Anti-Atlas, to establish and get kicked off a a scout drill program, which will be looking at various targets on that property. So we're looking at areas where we know from our own work that we've got extensive copper mineralization visible on surface. There's artisanal or ancient workings available. Some earlier prospecting trenches that were put in that return some intersections of copper on the surface. So we're evaluating all of these through the drill program. So as we said, you know, I think September, October, as these results start to come back in, it's going to be a very exciting time for us.
And you had said also that data room was open in Morocco and has been for, you know, the whole of this year and maybe part of last year as well. How is that progressing in terms of other companies coming in and looking at what you've got?
You know, over the last sort of 12 months or so, there has been quite a lot of interest in Morocco and the copper projects that we hold. I think what is going to be the game changer for us is to have some drill data. And then it just sort of elevates it from being an early stage exploration sort of play into something more substantive. And for ourselves as well, you know, the scout drilling, they're quite widely spaced holes because we're identifying and trying to understand more about the geology and the model there. But, you know, based on the results and the outcomes that we get from this work, we're quite hopeful and confident that that will allow us then to proceed with more systematic grid drilling and gradually working towards that concept of getting a maiden mineral resource over the Agdes project. You know, initially it's going to be the inferred category, because the holes will be wider space, but systematically placed along sort of section lines. But then you'll infill that and elevate the confidence levels of the resource. You know, I think the drill data is going to open the door to a lot of interest coming into Morocco on these assets that we've got.
I think, just want to add, I think that having increased confidence on our part allows us to negotiate from a stronger position. And I think, you know, as we developed the various assets, whether it was in Rwanda with Rio Tinto or we now in Morocco, it's important that we take that value and we take assets further along the value curve so that we can capture more. Again, getting back to that, reducing the potential for dilution and giving the shareholders the maximum value, we really want to have a bit more, let's say, a bigger stick when we go into the meeting. And I think the drilling program will help with that in that regards.
And just as a final thing, what's happening in Botswana then? We got those licenses and we brought on the guy, I think you had the licenses. So how do you see that progressing?
Well, we've expanded the portfolio from the initial acquisition made in January, February this year. You know, we had one license in the Kalahari Copper Belt. We've managed to acquire, well, not acquire, but we applied and granted another six licenses down in the belt. So we've been going through a process now of target generation. We've been acquiring the geophysical data, the airborne geophysical data from the authorities, reprocessing, reanalyzing. We've done some remote sensing investigation as well. And we're just going through another phase of reinterpreting some of the geophysics so that we can sort of tune ourselves into where we want to be on the ground. You know, the initial work sort of identified areas that were anomalous and looked interesting, but they were covering a strike length of 20 kilometers. So what we're trying to do is reduce that down and be more sort of precise in where we start the groundwork. But hopefully what we'd like to do is sort of around about September is start getting on the ground and do some field work. And really, you know, we want to do that at that time of the year before the summer starts down there and it gets very hot and unpleasant.
I'd just like to summarize because, you know, Etirion isn't a company I know massively well. But it sounds to me like you're having drilling at Rio Tinto, drilling in Morocco, drilling in Botswana, this new deal at the same time. All at the same time, all these catalysts are going to come around in the next 3 to 6 months. Is this the idea?
I wouldn't describe it as drilling in Botswana.
Not quite yet for drilling then.
Not quite yet, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think one of the things to point out is we have undertaken a review to rationalize the number of projects we have. For example, in Morocco, we have a couple projects that I describe as outliers that are a bit, let's say, further off the beaten path and or not necessarily prospective or as prospective as the team would like to see. And so we're undertaking a review to determine how best to make sure we stay focused.
Right.
That's an important thing to mention. I don't want the market to perceive or think that we are unfocused. We are just incredibly busy.
It sounds like you're incredibly busy, to be honest. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. We're happy with it.
Good. Well, I mean, we wish you luck. I mean, when, Charles, are we going to get the RNS that says Rio Tinto found 50 million tons of lithium and here's a big check?
I think one, I don't think Rio Tinto's marketing department or PR compliance department would be thrilled with that.
Don't think they're going to sign that one off again this
No,
time.
I don't think so. I think, you know, we speak to them on a regular basis. We spoke to them earlier today, as a matter of fact. What we expect is that we will be, and they were very, very, very supportive in this regards. We will be giving technical updates and operational updates on a regular basis to the market. They've committed to that. And so the first part of that is some drilling results. And so they said that they would expect that that would happen sometime before year end. So, you know, that's keep that, you know, in pencil, but that's when we expect us to make some sort of announcement.
Excellent. Well,
Okay,
we're
very
looking
good.
forward to welcoming you back on in future and obviously updating the market with any news releases.
Great to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Excellent.
Great to
Thanks,
talk to you.
Charles.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, well, I mean, let's have a look at some of the stocks that are on your radar then, Charles. And I noticed you put together a new site. You've got the miningaim.co.uk, and you put together a new sort of blog called Mining Aim, the H2 Edit. Do you want to just talk us through some of those on that list, please, Charles?
Yeah, sure. Let's go through all of them, Phil. Do you want me to just literally list them off, or do you want to
Yeah,
ask
list
about
them off
specific
and
ones?
we'll have a bit of a commentary on them as well, because obviously we'll probably know some, but it's always good to get your thoughts.
Well, yeah, I think some of them kind of cross over, and some of them, you know, my own opinions. But yeah, okay. Well, let's start at the start. We've got ARC Minerals, where, you know, sentiment was pretty weak. Now the share price has kind of come back closer to the placing price, but it was a 1.3p last week, at the start of last week. But they've got this joint venture with Anglo American for, you know, nearly $90 million. There was a pretty underwhelming raise, you know, and there was questions over the board's compensation. But at the end of the day, we've now got to this point where drilling in Zambia should be starting soon. License issues are going to get resolved relatively shortly as well, I expect. And then you're going to have a sage from Botswana come back soon as well. So I'm hoping that over the next sort of 3 to 6 months, you're going to see some really strong sentiment come back into ARC. Along the same lines in Zambia, we've got African Pioneer. Obviously, you guys know really well. Again, really good copper licenses in Zambia. Many of them are being explored under its option agreement with FQM. You know, I make no secret of this. Zambia is the place to be if you want to do copper exploration. And I think, you know, we don't know where the really high grade, the really great stuff is going to be found. But if you're drilling in the country, it feels to me like, you know, it's lottery tickets essentially. Somebody's going to find it, but you've got to be in it to win it. And an African Pioneer, you know, is along with Minerals, those are two like really good choices, I would say. Alien Metals, trading under UFO. So project financing for Hancock, this is in Western Australia. So direct shipping or iron asset. Looks like it's going to be very close. So again, in H2, they get that project financing. The share price should do really well because similar companies, all their neighbors who have got financing, share prices shot up within sort of 3 to 6 months of getting hold of it. Amaroq Minerals, again, exploration. This is in Greenland. Obviously, Nalunaq, the flagship gold project, you know, we're hopefully going to get into production later this year, but it's the critical minerals, the exploration. And there's the hope that it'll be a Voisey's Bay too. They're going to find some amazing kind of nickel copper asset in that exploration with joint venture partner ACAM.
Let me stop you, Charles,
Hit
because
me.
you're flying through this.
I can fly through them all if you like, Gab.
Azamet, the what? No, Amarok, sorry.
Amarok. Amarok.
Amarok. Okay.
Yeah.
What are they actually trying to achieve? What are they going for?
So there's two things to bear in mind. The first is Nalunaq and Nanoq. So a huge, huge gold production that they're going to start getting online towards the end of this year. We're talking, you know, this is a company with you know, a market cap in the hundreds of millions. It could go higher and higher. It's one of these companies where the gold itself is enough. But then on top of that, they're exploring in Greenland these critical minerals, so copper nickel deposits under South Greenland Copper Belt. And this is, you know, this is something that could, you know, be really, really, really interesting. So in 2023, their drill program at Sabre, they identified, you know, what they think is going to be a really big copper mineral system at Target West. So they're hoping for a large scale porphyry style system. Obviously, porphyries are what everyone, you know, wants to look for, whether it's, you know, Alex at eStar or Oliver at Gold, you know, Guardian Metal. But the idea is they're going to find, you know, huge copper deposits, huge nickel deposits, and then on top of the gold production, it's going to be one of these companies that's just going to explode.
Yeah, they've got Stendalen, haven't they, as well? That's the nickel copper discovery, I think.
Yeah,
And it's like,
it seems to be hotting up this area, though, doesn't it? I mean, and I mean this area by Scandinavia as well as the copper and nickel deposits. You've got Metals One who came up with something this week in terms of increasing the production by double, less than 3 million market cap. And, you know, you've got market caps equivalent in Canada of £70 million plus. You've also got Kendrick Resources, which you've written about as well, with the same type of thing. So if you had to choose, and obviously you have chosen with Amaroq because of the gold, I presume, but from a purely exploration point of view, what's your thoughts on Metals One and Kendrick in terms of it's in the same game, if you like?
Well, I would say with Amaroq, they're different guests of fish, right? Because Amaroq already has, you know, hundreds of million market cap, and they've got this massive joint venture. And so, you know, you might find that I think it will do really, really well. But it's kind of like comparing like Jubilee Metals, for example, which has already seen huge growth, to like one of the smaller companies out there in Zambia, like, you know, African Pioneer. In terms of, you know, who's going to find it further, I've chosen Amaroq, but I also really like Metals One, hence why I dubbed them, and also Kendrick. And, you know, both of those companies have really small, you know, 2, 3, 4 million pound market caps. You know, they fluctuate a bit, but these are very, you know, tiny micro cap companies.
Yeah, and they're both under 3 million mark.
So
Amaroq's about 200 million cap.
Exactly. So, yeah, you can't, these are different.
No comparison, is there?
Okay. No, I suppose I wasn't asking comparison. It was more what seems to be hotting up is these critical metals in Scandinavia.
Yeah, well, they're all, you know, a lot of them are in, you know, near the geology. They're all kind of like along the same kind of belts, right? But the really big thing to understand with, you know, with Kendrick, for example, or Metals One, is, you know, European Union strategy. So it was only sort of, was it last month, the month before, the European Union signed off on this critical minerals deal. So there's tons of grant funding going around for, you know, strategic metals like nickel and copper. So both Kendrick and Metals One are going to go after the grant funding. Now, one of the really interesting things to bear in mind is there's a significant amount of funding available, but in Scandinavia, where there's like big mining hubs and the majors are all involved, it's kind of easy to develop mines compared to the rest of Europe. So you'll probably find that the grant funding that the EU has allocated is more likely to go to Scandinavia, simply because the rest of Europe seems to, you know, it seems to be a nightmare to develop anything. And, you know, if you look at Portugal, for example, the Barroso mine, the lithium, and Savannah Resources, they're having a nightmare trying to develop that. And it's the Rio Tinto in Serbia, the Jadar mine? Again, they're finding it very difficult. You try and develop any, you know, imagine if you try and develop a copper mine in France, they'd have it shut down. They'd be on fire within about 5 minutes. So, yeah, I mean, these kind of microcaps, they're really undervalued. And the big thing is that, you know, if you've got a £3 million market cap, and you can get like a £1-2 million worth of grant funding to cover your exploration, that's kind of company changing, you know, and a lot of these companies are, you know, like Kendrick or like Metals One, they've got the decent assets, they just need to explore them more and they need the funding to do it. And ABU is literally giving it to them. So it's a case of how long until you get that grant funding, you know, over the line.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you one on that, because the one on my radar for a while, Charles, being in that area, is Green Rock Mining. I don't know if you know them, but they've got the Amitsoq, I believe is their asset, up in Greenland. And they put together a pre-feasibility study, and their market cap's like 3 million. I've never really understood the valuation. And I think their feasibility study said like, pre-tax NPV of about 942, they just had an update on it, and a pre-tax IRR of 34.5%, and then like an after-tax IRR about 26, gross revenue 6.58 billion, and then total gross profit of 3.1 billion. I mean, do you think the market's missing a valuation there on Green Rock?
I think that, you know, I looked at them, this is January 2023, you know, so I go like only once, and I had a chat to the guides over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the Fuel Black Sands, the Melville Bay iron ore project, they've got mineral resource estimates, you know. Blacksock, the graphite project they have in the south of the country. I don't know if this has been updated, but you had a JORC resource, 8.28 million tons of ore, average grade of 19.75% graphite. And they did, again, this is almost 2 years ago now, they did the test work. The graphite can be upgraded to more than 99.95% purity and can be processed into spherical graphite, which is the type you need to put into EV batteries. So it seems to me that they're, you know, really, really undervalued, Green Rock.
Is that the one that was spun out of Alba?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Alba had news this week as well, didn't they, about the golden whales?
clog out update, wasn't it? Yeah.
Is Albert still the majority owner, isn't it?
I think yeah. Maybe they've had to raise since, so they've gone down a bit.
Yeah, they had a raise on the 18th. I think they raised about $300,000 at share price at 0.035. But I mean, they've been beaten down, haven't they? But they did. They had an update on the clog out.
No, but I mean, the raises in Greenup, if they have raised, I don't know. So I'm speaking off the top of my head, will have meant that Alba's position is probably dropped below 50% now. But I mean, it was, I think it was 60% plus when they first listed.
Yeah,
but the current position on there is there are 37.5% according to the share register on the share pad.
Yeah, I mean, the problem that Greenrock has, they did a placing on the 28th of May and raised, you know, £238,000, right? On that 1.8p a share. It's, you know, London doesn't want to support these risk plays. And so, you know, they're at some point they'll have to raise again in order to continue their activities. And the question is, you know, that something needs to change, not just for Greenrock in particular, but there needs to be a way to get capital on fair terms, because, you know, they have these amazing assets. They've got the joint resources. You'd think that it would be quite easy to get somebody involved, but it's just becoming harder and harder. But again, Greenland is becoming a place where, you know, mining activity is, you know, becoming more and more common, more and more, you know, it's always been a mining country. So you might find that they get some good news over the next few months. I hope so, anyway.
We'll start talking arse now, anyway.
What? Asia Met?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, again, Asia Met is another one. You know, I feel like all we talk about is stocks that have been beaten down by wider markets. Some of them get, you know, I didn't even know Guardian Metal was beaten down a few months ago, and now it's, you know.
Conroy's not up yet. That's next, talking about beaten down ones.
Yeah, well, it's the sector, isn't it? But, I mean, Asia Met, it's the same thing, right? Like BKM Copper Project. They recently announced they found a way to decrease the total initial material mined by 47%. Essentially, they went to the banks a while ago and said, right, we want project-level financing alongside our various partners. And the banks came back and said, right, in order for us to agree this, you need to jump through these hoops. And they've now pretty much jumped through all the hoops. So my theory is I'm hoping they'll get project-level financing within this half, you know, within the next 6 months. I reckon it's quite likely. And then the share price will re-rate, and it's as simple as that. It's one of those ones, you know, I mean, I say this, tell this to people all the time, they don't listen. But whenever a company says, right, we're going to get financing next week, it tends to mean about a year and a half from now, after severe due diligence issues. You know, they're all the same.
When, no names like, mentioned.
Oh, no, gosh. No. But I'll happily, you know, like, you know, and I'm not dropping them in, but Kodal Minerals, for example, they released a photo yesterday, the day before, or no, if I even like a drone image of their what is going to be their plant at Bikuni in Mali. And they're going to be successful. They'll be great. But they're saying they're going to be producing in Q4. And I can't help but think, you know, this seems very, very ambitious. So if you do manage to do it, I'll be very happy for you. And, you know, but I feel like a lot of these companies, you know, surely just give a realistic timeline. People would be more prepared to listen to it. But Asia Met, finally, I think now, like Alien Metals, both of them, exactly the same thing. They've now finally done all the due diligence, so hopefully they'll both get over the line. But the next one, Conroy Gold, as you mentioned, Phil, we know that the JV partner, Demir, just walked parted ways. I say recently, it's, you know, a couple of months ago, so the share price is kind of in the doldrums. There was one day where it shot up, didn't it?
70%, didn't it, one day, yeah.
So someone's taken a position, clearly. Someone potentially, you know, with more information than we have. You know, and I thought this was a great value earlier in the year, but I still think, you know, if you liked it, you know, great value, you'll love it at exceptional value. But the big thing for me, Marion Moroney, they just appointed her as a non-executive director. She spent over two decades at Barrick Gold, big Barrick. If you don't know who Barrick is, you know, use Google. But she spent 5 years of those two decades as vice president of new exploration opportunities. Now, color me crazy, but if you've got a market cap of like two potatoes and a carrot, and you've just brought on board somebody who spent 5 years, you know, in charge of exploration at Barrick, that must be worth a punt. That surely must be.
2.8 carats, actually. It's worth
2.8 carats. You know, I think obviously Conroy's just gone down and down and down over the years. But at the end of the day, if you know, the gold is there. They've done the exploration. They have the gold. I think it's just a case of they need to, you know, they need some really strong strategic moves. But, you know, if Marion's there, and, you know, hopefully she's not there just to draw a salary, I'm hoping that she's looking at it as a real opportunity. And if you have, you know, an RNS one day that's, you know, relatively soon that says Barrick Gold joint venture signed, it could say for 5p, it wouldn't matter. The market would move. And then we can move on to Fulcrum Metals, right? With Fulcrum, I find, you know, because our Fulcrum is different to the others on this list because, yes, it's got some uranium licenses, but mostly it's a technology play. So they're on the verge of signing an exclusive license agreement with Extract, which is affiliated with Bechtel, which is a massive, massive mining corporation. The idea is they're going to process gold tailings in Ontario. And these are, essentially, the gold tailings, it wasn't economically viable to get the gold out of these tailings. And now with this technology, it might be. In fact, it looks like it's very likely that it will be, and they're going to make a significant amount of money. There's $10 billion of gold tailings around Ontario. So they sign an exclusive license agreement, and if the tech works, given this Bechtel is behind it as well, there's a good chance that this is a company that could go on to do really, really great things. And it's really under the radar compared to a lot of the other stuff. And, you know, they're quietly getting stuff done, but it's one that I look at, you know, it's in the H2 edit, but I'm looking, you know, 3 to 5 years, just wait and see, you know, the growth over time. Galileo Resources. Galileo. I mean, this is the thing. Because you guys,
me figured,
here we come. But you guys know Galileo.
I see a little silhouette.
Galamushka, shall we do that?
There's no way to talk about Colin in that way, whatever, man.
But, you know, obviously there's a few in the portfolio. African Pioneer, I really like this license. Galileo, they got the mining license, the small scale mining license for Lan Sobe. You know, I say recently, but, you know, it was a good amount of time ago. Yeah.
2 or 3 months ago, yeah.
So, you know, recently is perspective, but, you know, the optionality at this license, the exploration potential is exceptional. And where it's located, you know, it's also, you know, surrounded by bigger players. And I guess, you know, for me, the question is, I don't know what Colin's doing with it. I should probably ask him in a podcast at some point relatively soon. But there's got to be a plan, having got that license. Somebody, you know, the money's in the ground to be dug up. Somebody's got to, you know, come in and do, either whether it's a joint venture partnership or whether it's something kind of modular. I mean, I speculate, and I don't know whether this is completely outside the realms of possibility, Jubilee Metals, which obviously Colin is very strongly associated with, they have, you know, modular tech potentially. But it, you know, at the end of the day, I look at the Lan Sobe and I go, they've got the mining license, they've got the exploration potential, and obviously Galileo has dozens of other assets on the books. Something's got to happen there at some point in the next 6 months. Would you say, Kev? Like, it feels to me they've got the license. They should be doing something with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt he's been approached. Colin's been approached by the Chinese. He's been approached by other miners in Zambia. And the big one, really, I suppose, is it's right next to Wolf. What is it?
Mafalera. It's actually right next to the Mopani mine, which is the one that ZCCM own with IRH Holdings.
So it's like within a few kilometers of the Mopani mine and mining facilities and the Jubilee waste project, okay, of 350. And I very much doubt it's Jubilee situation, to be honest, because they're not into mining in any way.
They're processor.
But it could be an extension of the Mopani mine, IRH, with higher grade, deeper copper, with the ability to have an open pit initially that would be very viable. So how much is it worth? I mean, it's probably worth, I mean, being realistic, it's probably worth $50 million, and I'm not over the top with that, okay? I think if I actually said that to Colin, he would laugh at me because it's probably
there's a lot more, doesn't he?
Because it's probably worth more, okay? But the reality is you've got Galileo there worth, what, I think it's 10, 12 million pounds, something like that.
Roughly that,
As a market cap. You've got that. You've got what we saw when we were over there, Phil, in terms of the Shinganda drill results and the Shinganda gold, potentially, and also, you know, high-grade copper as well. They have numerous assets, and not just in Zambia. Yeah. And they have plenty of cash. So it's one of those companies that I think is seriously undervalued. It's as simple as that. I mean, I think Galileo in 2 to 3 years' time could be worth a couple of hundred million. Mm. And I don't think that would be, like, over-egging it. That's my view on it.
I think they have so many assets. They just need to, you know, it'll be one RNS, I think, that kickstarts it. You know, I imagine it'll be on the Lan Sobe. I don't know. But where it is, located to all these major producing mines, it just seems, yeah, at some point it's just going to blow. It just will.
Yeah, it should. But
it should. It should.
We've been saying this about quite a number of stocks now for probably 2 years.
Well, you know,
but they've all been progressing their situations in the ground, haven't they?
They always take a lot longer.
They always take longer than what people think, what management say, and often it's nobody's fault. It just does, you know, and the markets haven't been great the past couple of years. They are starting to turn, though. You'll notice, I mean, like, I'm about to speak about Georgina, but you'll notice that, like, IPOs, RTOs, there seems to be a lot more activity in the market, more appetite for risk. Obviously, you know, we've got Rome Resources coming to the market, Georgina's coming, you know, back to the market. You know, Helix Exploration, again, I'll talk about them in a sec, they IPOs. And Priority AI, again, coming, you know, there's quite a few that people are prepared to put money into risk capital again. So do you guys get that? Are you feeling that at the moment? There seems to be a lot more positivity that we have.
Yeah, it's moving. And do you know what we had? We had John Betridge on last week on the roast. And what it showed me was that there is liquidity in the market because he has been able to trade so much better this year than he has for a few years, because the liquidity in some of these stocks on AIM, especially, you know, Helium One's a good snack. It is there in a few stocks,
yeah,
but not all stocks.
Well, I have shares in, you know, I won't name them because I don't want to, but like, I'm sure you're the same, shares in various companies where even if there's a spike and there's a good trading day, you can't sell them because the liquidity's not there. It's as simple as that. So, you know, it's almost like they're private companies, some of them, because you can't sell the shares anyway in any volume. And if you do, you'll tank the share price, so it's pointless. But yeah, obviously, you know, the thing is that, like I've said before, I mean, we were talking about it a couple of months ago, we need one big, massive, you know, Greatland Gold-esque Javier on discovery. And whether that's going to be, you know, somebody out in Zambia like ARC or African Pioneer or, you know, any of the Colinberg companies, whether it's going to be something in Ontario or Nevada or Western Australia, we just need one big win and then the interest will come rushing back to the sector. But as it stands, it feels like we're overdue one. We need, you know, something needs to come out and then it'll, yeah. Speaking of which, Georgina, so they're getting ready to RTO and they've got their flagship Hussar. This is in the Oxford Basin of Western Australia. And effectively, they're going after helium. Drilling should kick off in Q4. There is some exploration risk like there is with, you know, with any of these plays. But the idea is the wells are already there. They're going to re-enter them. They'll deepen these existing wells. If the helium and hydrogen is there, they'll get it out and it's a very simple and production play. I think it's, you know, the RTO will go well. I think the share price will be higher in a few months after it launches. As simple as that, really. You know, moving on to Greatland Gold. I mean, this is quite a fun one because I get messages almost every other day saying, Charles, can you get in contact with Sean? Can we do an interview? Can we do an interview? And I'd be like, well, what can I ask him? You know,
no, you can ask him everything, but what would
he ask? What would he say? Sean, what's the plan with Wailu? Sean, what's the plan with Rio? Sean, what's the plan with X?
Sean's gone into radio silence.
He has. He doesn't want to talk to anybody, you know? He can't even say anything. Can you imagine an interview? You know?
It's what's known as hamstrung.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we all hope, you know, I think. Yeah. I mean, Dean Horton, right, this is quite recently, well, very recently, Fortescue Aristocracy. He's taking the reins as CFO, right? That's got to tell you something, you know? The board that they've put together is just disgustingly ridiculous what they have. So, you know, all these people coming on board, if I ever come on board as a company as a CFO or the non-executive director or whatever, you know, people will pay attention. But when you've got Fortescue chaps, it's just a Fortescue party is what it is, right? Greatland's going to take on 100% of Harry Aaron. I think that's very likely now, unless Newmont pull out and, you know, see sense and go, actually, we don't want to give this up. And then it's a question of, you know, what's the debt? What's the equity? What's the package going to be? But it's going to be this half. I think it must be this half. We're going to know. I own shares in Greatland Gold. I'm really hoping that it's going to be a really great deal. It's going to be very exciting. Regardless, it's going to be very fun. And yeah, that definitely makes the picks. What do you guys, do you think that's going to happen? Do you reckon Greatland is going to take
it? I messaged Sean a week ago and I'll read you the WhatsApp. I'm sure he won't. It doesn't really say anything. Okay. I said, what's happening down under? ? He said, keeping busy at my end as we head through a Perth winter. And I said, I know you can't say anything. What timelines do you hope you can? Didn't respond. Because he can't.
He can't say a damn thing, can he?
Okay, you know, you've summed it up. He can't say anything. He's in negotiations, for sure. Things are being negotiated. How it all turns out, I don't know. But personally think, from interviews that we've had over the last year plus with Sean, that he was smiling like a Cheshire cat that they want to divest this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So he wants the whole thing. He wants, you know, what they're working on now and also the old processing plant.
Yeah.
And, you know, even Telfer probably is of value, even though it's been mined out, but it probably hasn't been mined out. Just big company doesn't want to bother the backside doing it anymore.
Yeah.
So I think that's what he wants. Yeah. And it will be a company maker for Greatland Gold. And yes, Greatland Gold will become £1 billion company if this happens.
I can't wait for the interview. I'm hoping it's a video, not an audio interview, because he'll be sort of bouncing up and down in his chair with so much information to spill when he's finally ungagged. It's going to be quite fun. But then moving on. Because again, all of it is speculation with Greatland Gold. We're just kind of like crossing our fingers and waiting for Sean to pull it out the bag. Guardian Metal Resources. They again rechristened from Golden Metal. Do you know, Pilot Mountain, you know, we say it a million times, largest undeveloped tungsten deposit in the US. This, we're at the perfect storm of political and economic catalysts. US government grant funding, you know, in my view, almost certainly, you know, a large amount of funding coming the company's way. Drilling's going on underway at Pilot Mountain, so the saves are coming back. It's going to be a great 6 months. We're going to end up, you know, I think with Guardian, personally, I think with 100 million market cap, roughly 12 months from now, I think is very reasonable. It could be higher, but I'm going to go relatively conservative because we've already seen such an increase over the past year or so. But Guardian is just going to keep going up and up. What do you guys feel? What do you think?
I agree. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that, the performance has been excellent. I think Oliver is brilliant in the way he delivers. The news flow has been outstanding in the just over a year that they've been listed or admitted as a spin out. I think that Grant News potentially, you know, if and when that comes, let's hope that there's some news on that forthcoming in the next whatever months, which again should add more value to the projects. But yeah, exciting just to see how these potential copper porphyry systems, I mean, you know, not just talking about the tungsten, but, you know, look at the assets that they've got at Garfield, the Highland Mountain. You're talking world-class assets there.
Yeah, I think it could be very, very interesting. I mean, the key thing for me is the scoping study, I think it was back in 2017. If you're looking at the tungsten grade, it's an acceptable grade, but it's not massively high. So what you want to find, obviously they found the garnet already, but what you want to find is either with this drilling, a higher tungsten grade, potentially. And it's possible that it's there, because there hasn't been drilled particularly much this asset, or alternatively, more buy credits. So what you want to see, okay, we've got tungsten here, we've got garnet here. What else is there? Zinc in the ground, is maybe a bit of copper.
There's huge amounts of silver as well.
Exactly. So, you know, and indeed, the previous owner, I tried, was it four? It was four before Guardian, but they found gold shows as well at Pilot. So if you have a tungsten play, fantastic, because you've got this, you know, huge critical minerals problem in the US and they're going to want the tungsten. But in terms of like the operating costs of running a plant, if you've got polymetallics coming through, then that hugely, you know, improves the investment case as well.
Yeah.
So when there's a saves come back, you really want to see, you know, the tungsten grades, but I'm also hoping that you're going to have a much better understanding of, you know, what else you've got there. What are your other buy credits? You might find
You had an end ground value of over $1 billion in the silver.
Yeah.
And you had the same if the garnet comes back as sort of viable, as in it's usable in industry. So that would be $2 billion of in ground valuation, I think, or more.
Yeah.
And that's only on the original asset. That's not the expansion of the asset. I personally think that because this is an American asset, and because I think they're finding more and more of this stuff, the valuation will become a US-centric valuation over the next 12 to 18 months. So your figure, I think, is actually prudent. And obviously, as I am Mr. Raptastic, I think it's more likely to be 200 or 300 pence, not 100 pence.
I know. The problem is, if it had been 30-35p for a year or 2 years already, I'd be more inclined to agree with you. The problem, I just feel, because it has such a massive gain already, it feels almost greedy for it to do exactly the same.
Is that massive in today's standards, or is that massive by March 2020 standards? Because
you're right.
Just waking up, you know.
Yeah. I know, this is the thing, right? And for example, yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't taken profits from Guardian Metal when I first covered them at like 7.5, 8p, whatever it was. I still have my initial holding, and I've added to it. Normally, I would take money off the table at this point, and I'm not doing it.
Exactly,
and
because you believe that it's going to do
money. It's going to go higher. Yeah,
to go much higher. We all do.
And we've done the same thing as well.
Yeah.
So we're not in any different situation. We have not taken any profit, and we've added. So
yeah. So you know, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. We have another 12 months. Oliver's not allowed to leave now. He lives at Guardian Metal. If he ever leaves, I'll be very cross with him. But I think it's just going to keep going higher. And then Pilot Mountain will get sold, and then everyone can go have a beer, and we'll all be happy. Nothing like this.
And then he'll go on to the gold.
Yeah,
gold. Because that was the whole point of gold and metal gold and resources metal. Initially, yeah. Wasn't it? And then obviously Pilot Mountain came out.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, there is gold in them the hills in Nevada, I'm pretty sure.
I think the Carlin type mineralization is super fun as well. People may not notice it, but so Carlin type mineralization, it's you have a dense amount of gold, but when you look at the rock visually, you can't see the gold seams because it's disseminated finely through the rock. So when you're doing the exploration, that's going to be super fun because it's kind of like invisible ink. You drag out the assays, you can't see it. You know, Oliver won't be able to know there's gold there until we get sent off for analysis, and then it comes back. It'll be like Christmas morning. It'll be super fun.
Well, I think they'd probably be doing the XRFs to make sure that there is gold there, but yes. And...
Oh, I know. That's surface exploration. You know, I find the drilling...
It's not very reliable on the whole gold.
It's not reliable, but it tells them it's there.
Yeah.
You know, the XRF gun or whatever can be set up for gold or for copper or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but yes, you're right. You can't see it. Unlike... Conroy Gold, where you can go and hold a piece of rock and it shines in the sunshine because
you can
pieces of gold.
You can get a spade and go dig it up from the surface, some of the Conroy Gold, genuinely. I mean, when we talked to Professor Conroy, I even asked him, you know, is that something that keeps you off at night? It doesn't, you know, to be fair. But I think that'd be quite, I go, if I lived in that area of the country, I'd be out there with a spade as a child looking for it. You know, wouldn't anyone? Be quite fun. Metal detector in hand, spade in the other. But anyway, moving on.
We've been to the place where he...
You have done.
Where they trenched at surface and dug up this rock and 100...
Yeah, you can see physical specs on it.
123 grams per ton.
Yeah. But I mean, the Clay Lake Nugget is the one that was like almost pure. It was like 99. It was almost, you know what I mean? It was just like 93% gold.
You want more of those? Here's a question. If you had found one yourselves while you're out there, throw it in your pocket, or would you miss it?
We often take rocks back, of course. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which is, I mean, you see Kev at the X-ray, you know, going through security, and they're looking for his bags and pulling out. Like, they always, you know, pull them to one side, and then he's like trying to explain to them that why has he got a piece of, you know, lithium or, you know, spodumene in his bag, or a bit of gold, a bit of rock, a bit of, you know, magnetite or whatever in his bag. But yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. I mean, you hear stories of people picking diamonds from the likes of Karelian Diamonds in Finland, some of the locals, are making jewelry out of them. So yeah, who knows?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Like, yeah, I'm trying to think of the word. Like, a lot of mining still, when you say mining, it's just surface exploration by, you know, whoever's local to the area. And if you know there's like diamonds just, you know, in the local stream, you're gonna go get some, aren't you? You know, Helix Exploration. Okay, so this company IPO'd, you know, relatively recently. They're fully funded to drill two helium wells, Ingemar Dome and Rudyard. I, you know, from my perspective, the management team there are exceptional. Bo Sears, you know, wrote the book on helium. They're going to find it. They're going to make loads of money, and it's just going to be fantastic. As simple as that, really. The investment case is just, it's fairly easy. It's an exploration play. Two drill wells, they're both going to be done in the next 6 months. If they're both successful, then you're going to make a lot of money. Yeah. Simple as that.
I mean, it's already done quite well. It IPO'd around about 10p, didn't it, on the share price? And it's 25. So it's actually done pretty, you could argue, you know, it's done very well recently since the, you know, the IPO.
It's the IPO. I mean, well, the thing is, they launched the IPO. Yeah, so back in early April, they raised £7.5 million and it was 10p a share at the IPO. And the market cap, £12.2 million. But the book demand was £22 million. So you have such a demand for the shares at the IPO. I suspect
someone did very well, actually. Someone got about loads of the 1p shares in the pre-IPO round.
Yeah, yeah. Well, someone's done
aggressive selling on the opening day at like 10p.
Yeah, and then a few weeks later it shot up and has nearly 30p now or something along this line. So I think it kind of what one of the things that you can like a lot of exploration plays, you have this kind of IPO happiness and then, you know, it shoots up and then it drops back down.
Yeah.
But this one, it's doing the drilling, you know, it's starting this quarter. So it's not going to have the opportunity to drop that much.
It's 26p now, and you,
yeah.
This was one of your choices for stocks that are going to go up this year.
Yeah, yeah.
The second half of the year. So just to give you a bit of an update on that, just so we can see, all of those stocks, there's only one stock that is significantly down so far, and that was Eastar Resources, which was my pick, just about sums it up. And why? Because basically 35% of the share register was given to the asset that was originally put in there, and Alex Walker was sort of a 40 or 50% shareholder of that. So he's now become literally 20% plus shareholder of Eastar Resources. But basically there was 35% dilution. So this is why it happened, which was not very good.
Hmm.
Obviously, it was going to happen at some point because it was a success payment. But it's one of those things that sort of sticks in the gullet a bit when it's 35%. It seems excessive.
It's done now though. So you know you've got we're only mid July, so you've got another 5.5 months. It could shoot back up. You never know. But yeah, I think there's so many, like last year it was difficult to pick stocks that I thought would do really well. This year there's tons of them, which is fantastic. But the next one, Jubilee Metals, I know you guys know it really well. Yeah, I know it pretty well as well. The big thing here for me is that Leon promised there'd be no delays to upgrading at Rouen. And to be fair, you know, there have been a couple of minor delays. In the scheme of things, it's nothing, right? This is Africa. There's always delays. And it's AIM. There's always delays. So just bake that into your expectations, no matter what anyone says. But it doesn't matter because, you know, it's now on the verge of, you know, these upgrades up and running completely. Jubilee, again, fresh record production of chrome. The copper expansion is going great. And I think it's this case that, you know, people haven't quite done the maths on the copper production. You know, forget the IRH deal, just Rouen and Sable alone. This company's going to be worth £1 billion within the next few years. Like, it just must do.
Yeah. Jubilee is one of those companies that sort of feels like it's pregnant. It feels like it's about to give birth.
It's going
to
go bang, because isn't it?
It's already a couple of £100 million cup, okay? But, you know, this is only the beginning in my view. And I mean, it's dropped back into the sixes now, basically because people either don't believe or just waiting for them to come out with the RNS that says, you know, everything is perfect, which will never happen.
Nice.
The RNS will never come out to say everything is perfect. We are talking about South Africa and Zambia in this particular situation. So
yeah.
It's never going to run quite as simple as everybody thinks. But the Rouen update is important, but the update for the two copper deals that they did to then fully fully feed the plant at Sable to produce, you know, copper itself, which they're getting positive on LME, then, you know, this is going to produce a huge amount of cash flow, a huge amount of cash flow.
More cash flow
than possibly the market cap.
Yeah, well, people haven't done the maths, have they? I mean, it's mad, but I mean, it's the other thing is that these two deals that they signed for kind of like mid-grade copper mines, they're not super low-grade, but they're not high-grade either. There are no other processors in the area with the capacity to process this grade of copper. So you're only going to be able to get it through one plant. And the choice is either to do a supply deal or to just do a, you know, like these, or to do what these two mines have done and gone. We'll just, you know, we'll take Jubilee shares essentially in return for giving the copper mine to you. So they're almost a monopoly on specific types of copper assets as well. So that Jubilee is, yeah. I talk a lot about sort of core portfolio stocks. Kendrick Resources, for example, Metals One, these are like small £3-4 million companies. They're not core portfolio stocks. They're companies where you're hoping you'll get sort of 10, 20 to 30 times return, but they're kind of higher risk. Whereas Jubilee Metals is a core portfolio stock, like Amaroq Minerals, 200-300 million market caps, loads of potential upside and just, you know, a huge amount of control in the countries that they operate in. And then you have companies kind of in the middle, like Power Metal Resources, chronically undervalued still. I mean, it still owns about 50% of Guardian Metal. And then it's got a joint venture agreement it's about to sign with ACAM for uranium licenses. And, you know, those two things alone are worth far more than what its market cap is. And then it's got dozens of other assets. I don't understand how Power Metal just seems to just have such a valuation disconnect based on, you know, just on Guardian Metal and the ACAM JV agreement for uranium alone. What do you guys think? I mean, you guys know Power quite well as well, don't you, Kev?
Yeah, certainly not as well as you, Charles, but it's one of those things. I think it's suffering from the fact that, do you think you're going to get a better return in the short term in gold or not gold, in metal resources? Because I think people have made that conscious choice. Now, that obviously isn't the whole investing community, for sure. But I think people have said, well, this horse is flying. And Power Metal Resources is trotting along. Yeah. Now, it hasn't actually even trotted, let's be honest. I mean, it's got a market capitalization of £20 million. 16 of that million is from Golden Metal Resources, as we speak. And they've signed a deal that's worth in excess of £10 million for the uranium.
I mean, up to 17. Yeah.
You know, so that alone adds up to 20-something million. And then you've got all the other assets that they've got. And, you know, the Saudi Arabian thing that's been started to be organized.
They're talking, £15 million IPO, you know, for Saudi Arabia. You know,
and they will own 30% of it.
30, 50. Like, it's ludicrous. It's the most, I think, in terms of undervaluation, it's probably one of the most undervalued companies in the market, just on a net asset value basis.
Yes, you've hit that nail on the head. From a net asset value basis. So in other words, if you want a low risk investment that you think could return, I think at least a steady 100% over the next 12 months. So, you know, should it be worth 40p by this time next year? Well, even if it doesn't appreciate any of its assets, then it should be. And if we talk about you talking about Golden Metal being worth a pound, forget exactly about my scenario. Then that's £50 million or £100 million market cap. You said that's £50 million. That's 2.5p for Power Metal Resources.
See, I think, you know, I've made this argument before. What Power Metal needs to do to validate, say externally validate its net asset value, it needs to sell some of its shareholding in Guardian Metal off market to a strategic investor, potentially in the US. That'll help Guardian Metal because it strengthens its shareholding book. But it helps both of them because what it will do, it will say Guardian Metal is worth this share price at this moment in time. And Power Metal's holding in Guardian Metal has real value, not just paper value. I think it will happen, you know, at some point, and then that will be the catalyst that shoots the rest of the portfolio up. I don't know whether it will.
I think the boom will happen in probably October. I think in October the announcement will come that Guardian Metal has received $10 million US grants. I mean, I'm guessing at the numbers here, but somewhere in that factor. And at that point, we will be in a situation to then sell 10%, 15% of Power Metal's holding to somebody else.
Yeah.
And they will pay 10, 15 million pounds for it. And Power Metals will then be cash rich then, as well as all of its other assets going, oh crap, now they can go on and move all their assets forward without having to raise any money ever again.
Ever again. That's the idea. That's the dream, isn't it? But
I think that's what's gonna happen.
Sean, that, well, you say Sean's dream. Sean's plan, I mean, the amount of work he's done and the share price hasn't moved. It's just, you know, to me it seems very unfair almost. Just give me 2 seconds because I'm going to lose my mind a little bit here. But the stuff that he's done with the strategic rebalancing, so he inherited this huge portfolio of projects, but, you know, the Athabasca Uranium joint venture, spinning off Guardian Metal Resources, this option agreement they have over Tati, the New Horizon Metals deal with Aruma, and disposal of the Victoria Gold deal's interests, you know, all of these things tidying up the portfolio, but more and more just a free carry exploration projects. It's just lottery tickets, essentially. And the more of them you have, eventually you're going to hit a big winner. Guardian Metals is their first one. What will their next one be? Will it be the uranium? Will it be Power Arabia? One of them's going to come big.
I think Power Arabia is going to be worth more than gold medals in the future.
I think it's Guardian medals. I think it's possible, but you need a spokesman for the company, and all of those, you know, the BGs.
Yeah, it will happen, I'm pretty sure.
Prospects, assets in Italy and Spain, really attractive to potential buyers because gas assets, essentially. Management put up a for sale sign. There's a few licensing issues that need to get resolved, but it's going to be sold. They're going to be gone within a few months, either Italy or Spain or both. I think we've talked about this before. There's no debt, there's no warrants. The company's already profit making. It won't be on the markets for much longer. Rome Resources, RTOing very shortly. They're going to drill targets for tin in DROC, Democratic Republic of the Congo. I'm generally a little bit wary about that jurisdiction, but the management team they have there, and previously discovered, you know, Alpha Mins deposit next door, they're able to manage the politics, and the asset they have there is just ridiculously prospected for tin. So I'm making an exception. This one I think is going to do really, really well. Sovereign Metals, again, we've talked about this many, many times. But the pilot plant they're building at Cassia, you know, this is the largest, world's largest rutile and second largest graphite deposit. It's only going to be mining maybe 5 to 10% of what the real mine will be capable of. And I'm pretty sure this is just the due diligence Rio Tinto needs to see before they make an offer for the remaining 85%, well, 80% now of sovereign shares that it doesn't own at the moment, having just exercised their option agreement. I reckon a $2 billion valuation, US dollars, for Cassia. So, you know, investors are going to be in for a big payday. Sunder Energy, previously Baron Oil. I keep this wild card in here. This is, again, not a core portfolio stock. I think Chadwick will eventually sell. Everyone's going to walk into the sunset with lots of money. And then finally, Upland Resources, which is one that, you know, I haven't covered in depth before, but I'm including it despite this corporate misstep they had last year, because the PSC and JV terms, I think, are going to get signed off very soon. Sentiment is a bit weak at the moment. The second that deal is signed, it's going to rocket. And that sums up my H2 plays for H2 2024. You know, that list is kind of may change or get added or chopped as we go, but those are the ones where I think if you have all of those put together within 6 months, you'll be up.
And I think we can revisit that, as you say, at the end of the year or even, you know, at the end of Q3, and we'll see how get an update on how things are progressing.
That's a great idea. As long as it's going up, if it's going down, ignore it until.
The other one that I just want to make a quick mention of is what happened this week with First Class Metals, which is obviously part of the POW stable as well. And they raised some money to pay for a few different things. And we've seen a 2.8p, which was actually a raise above the market price, which I think was about 2.6p. And it's moved on, and on Friday, 4p was paid, I think. So it's moved up 30, 40%. And I think it's just massively undervalued, to be honest, with the assets that it has. It's paid its money now. It's going to go into a season of exploration in, you know, what would be seen as a first-class area in Ontario, in Canada. Gold, lithium are the main two plays, I think, in this play. What's your comments on it, Chugs?
Well, I think it's in this area of the world, Ontario, where for whatever reason, London-listed companies in that area have kind of struggled. First Class Metals, sure. Yeah, Panther Metals, you know, with Darren, again, same area. I mean, they have had some assets that are very close by. Fulcrum, you know, they have you know, Ontario again with the gold. But I think that all three of those companies now, they're going to be helped by the jurisdiction. It's now becoming a place where a lot of exploration is getting done. And just on First Class Metals, I mean, you know, for POW, I did, you know, a brief look into it, but it does seem to me that it is still very undervalued. The issue is that the business case is that they find assets, they do some exploration work, early stage, you know, first curve mover, and then they sell them on for a profit. And they have sold a couple of assets on, but what they need to do to kind of validate the business model is sell on one asset for, you know, a significant amount of money. And then the rest of the...
Like a couple of million or near the market cap or something.
Or even like a million, right? Yeah. And then you look at all the other assets and you go, well, each of these could be worth a million. With the share price will instantly better reflect the real value of the portfolio. It kind of similar to Power Metal, you know, what we were talking about them potentially discussing Guardian, you know, but I think they're undervalued even now at 3.8p. But you had the opportunity not so long ago at literally, you know, a few days ago at 2.5p. So if you took the opportunity, well done.
And the 52-week high is like 9.9. You're out circa 10p. So they've got a long way to go to get back up to any sort of, you know, 52-week high.
I mean, end of December 2022, you know, a few months after the IPO, 17.25p.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very, very cheap. And it's just a question of, you know, how it gets funded. Now that question is to be answered. Just have a great season and find something, guys. That's, you know.
Even if they don't have a great season, the valuation has to be sort of £5 million. You know, and I don't mean that, you know, the fact is £5 million will put it at sort of 5.5, 6p. This seems to me to be a sensible valuation for what they have before what happens this season. They're able to sell something. Prior to this, at 2.5p, it was worth £2 million.
Interesting stuff.
Okay, well, I think we've talked enough. I mean, what we will say is final one is season finale of the roast. Obviously, we're going to take a well-earned break. Have you got anything planned, gents? Because I know, Charles, you've been talking about getting away from your desk sometimes. Have you got anything planned for the summer?
I don't know, to be honest, because on the one hand, I want to get away from my desk. On the other hand, I have so many ideas. I have so many ideas to make more money and do more websites. And there's, you know, I've been focusing on Junior Resource for a long time, but you know, I want to keep doing that, but also do more things. And the problem is the summer, this is the time where, okay, maybe there's some drilling going on, but most people are at the beach, right? Or having an Aperol Spritz. No one's really paying attention. Do you know, I was chatting to someone just before I came on with you guys. I hadn't even noticed the RNS system was down today. I hadn't even noticed. So, you know, it's summer. Like, people aren't paying attention. So it's a perfect time to get all the stuff done that I don't have time to do. But then at the same time, right now, it's like 23 degrees. The sun is shining. I'm going to get off this and go to the beach, because why not?
Brilliant. Yeah. And what about you, Kev? I know that you've been up in the Med recently. Have you got anything planned for the summer holes with a break?
Yeah, tomorrow early for Dahab to go to 43 degrees centigrade by the Red Sea, because I'm an idiot.
Are you going to melt? Are you going to be like a Kev slide piece of cheese on the floor?
No, I mean, basically, you just live your life from 7 p.m. till about 2 or 3 a.m. and then sleep until about 12, 1 o'clock. Is the general gist.
But we're going like a teenager, like a teenager with a hangover.
We're going to like emissions camp things with people from all over the Middle East. So that's the reason why we're going to put ourselves through this purgatory. And then I'm going to the north coast again. I'm going to be on the Mediterranean for a month.
Let's not mention Southgate, shall we? I mean, we didn't talk football this week, but obviously we made it so far. But the nearly men again, you know, just couldn't beat the Spanish. To be fair, the Spanish were the better team for sure.
But I think this is the problem, right? We play defensive football, right? It seems like we were just defending the whole time. If you're going to play a team that's better than you is going to beat you anyway, you've got to play attacking football and just take a risk. It's better to lose 5-0, right, than to just lose 2-1 knowing that you're definitely going to. I don't know.
The Premier League is not a defensive league, is it? Like, no. The Premier League, where 90% of those players play,
is aggressive.
Is aggressive. We go after them. We chase the ball. We get after it. You know, that's what we do. And then Southgate brings them in. And yeah, he got us to the final. Did he give us much enjoyment by getting to the final, other than the fact that we got to the final? I'm sorry, no. Hardly any of the matches.
We got
three
by the skin of our teeth, basically. Yeah, in reality.
But then, I'm not disappointed he's leaving. He obviously thinks he's going to get himself a very good Premier League job. I very much doubt he would succeed in the Premier League. But I think go.
The thing is, but then it's easy to criticize him. So, I mean, you have to say two finals. Do you know, like, he was in the final. Yeah.
Two finals, semi-final. If you look at his history and his record, it's way better than any of the recent managers.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think I'd rather be complaining about losing a final than nitpicking, right, which anyone can do.
Why don't we celebrate runners-up anymore? Like, it's a silver medal.
Yeah, because second is first loser. That's the reality in all things. Incredibly football.
Yeah. First is winner, second is nowhere.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They're talking about they want Guardiola to come in or Klopp to come in and manage England. They are dreaming. Those guys. Why would those guys take that much crap and join that?
Poison chalice, isn't it? Yeah. So
well, it's no, but the reward, right? Imagine if you win the World Cup as the manager of the England football team.
Yeah, I'd say bring back Sam Allardyce. That's what we needed.
I think you need Mike Bassett, England manager, the old.
We could do it between us. It's not hard, right? Because our goalie is a psychopath already. Just put him in the goal. You don't need to tell him what to do. He just, yeah. But strikers, literally, see the ball, right? See that net over there? You just kick it in that thing over there. No, don't just pass it around. Because actually, we had like one shot on target in the final, something insane like that. They don't even try. They didn't even bother. Anyway, no point getting angry.
Now, I think we'll say we've talked enough. We'll say thanks for listening. Please subscribe and hit the bell icon for any future notifications, any future episodes, and have a great summer.
Thanks for listening, guys. And have a good August. And enjoy. We'll see you back in September.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.